How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
There's a screen you like.
Hayward, three, straight away.
That's it. That's the screen I'm talking about. Right there in transition, you can get a good shot every time. I saw it coming.
You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Here's Locked On Jazz for the 14th of April, the day before playoffs start for the Utah Jazz. We'll break down my prep on what the Jazz and the Clippers look like this year and what the Jazz need to do. Plus, we'll stop by with Locked On Clippers host to get a breakdown from his perspective. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Happy good morning to you. Good afternoon. Whenever you're grabbing this before late Saturday night when the Jazz play game one of the playoffs. Here's what I've got. We'll look at pack for the Clippers and the Jazz to rack up the season because it's a Friday. I'll share some prep notes that I have for you. My prep's quite extensive at this point on this matchup individually and what needs to happen for the Jazz to win. And then we'll stop by with a host of Locked On Clippers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today's show is brought to you by the Murdoch Hyundai Group, the Murdochs, good people. Glad to have them aboard. They've got a lot of great deals. I was just actually recording a spot for them from March. The Santa Fe is still under $20,000. It's so interesting to have been exposed to the Hyundai and have learned kind of what that car is. And now I would tell you, you know, just make sure you comparison shop. Make sure you take a second, and when you're looking around and deciding what you're going to do for your next vehicle, that you include Hyundai on the list of cars you're looking at. I'll be honest, before I had been put in this car, I wouldn't have done that. Kind of makes me wonder, like, wow, that's kind of silly that I wouldn't have. But I have driving the Santa Fe Sport right now. Frankly, one of the things that jumps out to me is how often I see Hyundai's out there and realize that there's other drivers who have figured this out. And then the other, I think I've shared with you, Hyundai drivers love to talk to each other because they know you found out the secret also. 100,000-mile warranty with the Hyundai Assurance over 10 years. And then every bell, whistle, detail, thing you'd ever want as when, you know, from the perfect moonroof to a window shade to the safety features that notify you if there's a car there, if you're changing lanes, to the cruise control that sets and holds to the same position, to then just the nice space and beautifully well done front console with everything easy to reach. Just very impressively done, very much made for the driver is the way I would characterize it. And the Murdoch family has been great to get to know as well. Blake runs Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street. They also have a location in Logan and Linden. They're going to make sure you have a great experience. Their phrase is no regrets. And what they mean by that is making sure you realize when you leave that you worked with the right people who are going to extra effort to make sure that you get everything you need. And every little tiny detail, kind of very similar to the cars they're selling in the sense that they're going to keep the dealership open longer for service hours. They're going to give you free car washes. Just give you every little piece along with giving you a good buying experience that afterwards makes you glad that you used Murdoch. So it's Murdoch Hyundai is our sponsor today of Murray at 4646 South State Street. The Santa Fe is in at under $20,000 right now. All right, let's go to a pin across America and then dig in to the Clippers. And then we'll stop by with the host of Locked On Clippers. So this should be a good show. If you haven't heard it already, playoff preview with Zach Harper and Kevin Pelton at Locked On NBA, and then a big episode with Locked On Pelton that was really a lot of fun. So I earlier this week. I hope you get it. All right. I heard you say a recent podcast you might not be doing these much longer, so I thought I should jump on it now. I don't know. I feel like maybe pins have had their day. We've done it for 2 years. Please set a pin in Taylorsville, Utah, although I'm a diehard Jazz fan. It's not for me, but for my dear recently departed mother, Sharon. Like me, Mom was an avid Jazz fan, and as you will find Mom was as avid a Jazz fan as you will find who never missed watching a game. If you'd watched her watch a game, you'd know exactly how it was going. Her emotions told the whole story. Every dunk, three-pointer, even free throw made you think she'd won the lottery. But nothing made her angrier than when we'd lose, and each time that they didn't, she'd swear she wasn't going to watch anymore. Inevitably, however, she'd forget her promise and watch the next game with just as much passion. She and my dad took us kids to the airport at 3 o'clock in the morning to welcome the team home after Stockton's heroic shot in Houston. During the finals, she proudly displayed her Show Me the Title sign in her car. I don't know if anyone was as disappointed as she was when they lost to the Bulls 2 years in a row. Last month, my mom succumbed to a bacteria she acquired on a trip overseas and left us way too early. Some of my last memories were her watching Jazz games in her hospital room, and even in her weakened state, I could tell how much the team meant to her. I know she'd be thrilled to see the Jazz finally make the playoffs again. I can't begin to say how hard it is going to be to watch them without her. But I'll do my best to cheer double for her. Although in basketball is just a game, it's something she and I shared that is treasured moments who live forever. Thanks for all you do. Thanks for mentioning my sweet mom. That's from Nathan Ray. And that makes you think you should keep pins across the world. All right, let's get to this matchup. So the story really from the first two matchups is the Jazz inability to score, or first four matchups, and why. So the Jazz offensive rating in those games is a 96.7. Regularly, the Jazz score 107 points per 100 possessions. So they really got incredibly stymied. And then defensively, the Jazz were only okay. They were 105.9, which is actually pretty good considering the Clippers' offensive efficiency is about 110. So they really, the kind of untalked about story here is, and we'll talk about this with Locked On Clippers, is the fact that the Clippers actually didn't score that well either. But the Jazz just couldn't make shots and moreover didn't get the shots they wanted. Going back and reviewing those games, the Jazz couldn't get threes. For the season, the Jazz took 33% of their shots as threes. For that, the four games so far against Clippers, they've only taken 27% of their shots as threes. In the losses, they shot 28%. In the win, they went nuts, hit 14 of 21. That's going to be a huge aspect of this series, is one, whether or not the Jazz can get the three looks. You would think, as the Jazz roll Rudy to the basket, that it should open up a bunch of aspects for the Jazz to get those looks, to move the basketball, and maybe as they look at film, they'll be able to see that a bit better. Because that's, when it gets right down to it, that's what the Jazz are going to have to get, is those three-point looks predicated off of what Rudy's doing. Rudy, in the four games against the Clippers, and DeAndre Jordan had moderate success, 14 points, 12 rebounds. He wasn't negated at all. The Jazz got outscored considerably when he was on the floor because we did the whole series. Rudy shot 66%. He got 9 shots a game. He went to the line 3 times. There wasn't anything particularly glaring in Rudy's line that said to you that wasn't being taken away. So what was interesting, or that really Rudy exploded. So what's interesting to me here is that, and Rudy got better in the two games that were closer in March. Rudy averaged 19 points a game. In the two previous games, he averaged 9 points a game. He got, so he, as Rudy improved, we improved against them, and Rudy's improvement was truly remarkable. That jumps out to me a little bit, that somehow the Clippers took away those three-point shots. So then you start to dig into it a little bit and try to find out what does it mean, what's going on, what are they doing. Well, one of the things that they did is that Gordon Hayward did not play well in the three games. He did not play in one game, And then he did not play well in the three games in which he played against the Clippers. And what happened is he just didn't make his mid-range shots. And he was 16 of 42 for 38%. He was from 5 to 19 feet. He was 3 of 16 shooting. When DeAndre Jordan was on the floor, he was 11 of 35, Gordon, but was unable to get to the rim. He only took 4 shots of his 35 at the rim. I went back and looked at his 3 of 16, and what you had pretty regularly is high pick and roll, goes left, Jordan's now dropped back, hovering, taking away the drive, pull up, miss. One-on-one on a mismatch with Blake Griffin, beats him, Jordan's behind him, pulls up for a miss. One-on-one on Emba Amute, Jordan's behind him, pulls up with a miss. Gordon's not a great one-on-one player. Penetrating the lane after doing a twirling, fading back jumper, misses. Pick and roll over to the left, back, pull up, miss. High pick and roll, this time he goes right, he makes it. High pick and roll, right, makes it. Ball fake off a three-point line, pulls into a mid-range jumper because Jordan is back. One-on-one from the top, beats his guy, fading back, but Jordan's there, forces him to look back. So he never gets, you know, these are all the mid-range shots. That's why he never gets to the rim. That's what I looked at. But it's always the same kind of situation. He just was not making that mid-range shot at all. And that's a huge thing to keep an eye on. Gordon's been great. He's shooting 44% off the bounce on threes since the All-Star break, which probably is as good as anyone in the league. His off-the-bounce three-point game is now a little bit better than his catch-and-shoot three-point game. And his rim finishing is the best it's ever of his career. It's 69%. But against the Clippers, he got stymied. And he just couldn't get to the basket. So that's worth watching. Rodney Hood, and this goes to the inability of the Jazz to get threes. Rodney Hood, and I'll mention this with Locked On Clippers as well, of his 30 shots he took against the Clippers, he was 8 of 30, just 2 of 6 from 3, and only 4 of his 30 shots were catch and shoot. And he is a 42% catch and shoot 3-point shooter, 29.8% off the bounce 3-point shooter. So Rodney, they took away his catch and shoot game. And that is a big part of how we get our 3-point shooting game going. Rodney comes in 4 of his last 20 from 3, so it's important that he gets going. Rodney, one of the best late shot clock players in the NBA. So late in the shot clock in the series, Rodney, particularly with who they have defending, should be able to get shots. Those are going to be really, really important shots for the Jazz to get. Quick run through on, so really that's the, you know, that's the story as much as anything on the offensive end. Quick run through on some of our guys. George Hill, 2 for 10 on catch and shoot threes against the Clippers. George Hill on catch and shoot threes for the season, far better than that. For the season, 40%. So that's 2 misses. Since All-Star break, by the way, George Hill corner threes, 50%. Left corner for the year, 48% for George Hill. Really killing it. Defensive ranking for George Hill post-All-Star break, not nearly as good as it was pre-All-Star break. So that will be key to watch. Here's what's interesting on this. The Jazz are one of the best pick-and-roll teams in the league. The Jazz, fifth-best team with a pick-and-roll ball handler with it. But the Clippers, because of DeAndre, are able to drop him back. They play over the top of the pick. They force the ball handler off the three-point line. And then from there, they force you into these mid-range jumpers we're talking about because of the fact that DeAndre is as good as he is. And the Clippers have some really interesting defensive things they do. One is DeAndre's pretty aggressive. And so they don't allow you to get very many shots around the rim. When they do give up the shot around the rim, they're not very good at defending it. They're 25th in the league at defending it. and they're the second best in the league at defending the mid-range shot. What they do as well is when you take a look at restricted area and three-point shots, the two you want to deny, they're the third best in the NBA at denying those. The Warriors, and this may turn out to be a pretty important statistic. The Warriors are best at it. Miami was second best. Clippers were third. I believe Portland is fourth. San Antonio is, Jazz are fifth. San Antonio is seventh, and sixth is maybe Denver. That doesn't seem right. Dallas, I would guess, at doing that. So the Clippers only allow 60% of opposing shots to either be in the restricted area or threes. They're the fifth best at denying shots in the restricted area, the 13th best at denying three, and it comes out combined to the third best denying both of them overall. And when you do, but when you do get inside the paint, they're not very good. It's because DeAndre's so active. So that's one area where they're different. Their defense is the second best in the NBA defending the pick and roll ball handler. Jazz is the fifth best offense with the pick and roll ball handler. That's what we're talking about here. Gordon Hayward coming off that pick, pulling into now a mid-range jumper because he can't get to the rim on DeAndre Jordan, and you've got to be able to make that shot. It's not a very high percent shot, or you've got to move off of that into something else. That's going to be the offensive key for the Jazz of this series as much as anything, is the ability to do this. So, again, that's the Jazz. And then here's the other thing is as they're switching, if they get the Jazz into isolation, we're 27th in the league in isolation. So we're fifth best pick and roll ball handler, 27th in isolation, and the Clippers are the second best at defending that. All right, a few other quick notes, and then we'll go to Locked On Clippers. Mid-range shooters, Shelvin Mack, 43%. Rodney Hood is a good mid-range shooter, 45%. These are low percentage, but when you get in the mid-range, those are worth keeping an eye on. Joe Ingles' season explosion largely based on his ability to shoot off the bounce this year. His three-pointers off the bounce finished at 40% last year. They were at 29%. His above-the-break three-point shooting last year, 32%. This year, 45%. In each angle, he's now over 50% for the season. Joe Johnson, last six games, 20 of 33 from three. This guy has played 101 playoff games. He's been in the playoffs every year since 2007. He did not have a good playoffs last year. He went 3 of 23 from three against Toronto. He is when he is unguarded, his effective field goal percentage on catch and shoots is 70%. But he's an open three shooter. If a defender is within 4 feet of him this year in threes, he shoots 25%. If there's a defender 4 feet or more, he's 44%. So keep an eye. Let's see whether or not the Clippers give him any space at all. All right, that's a rundown of my notes. Let's take a quick look at Pack. I actually have a plane to catch. I'm heading to Vegas today to help my daughter as she gets ready for a golf tournament and then driving the rest of the way to L.A. And one of the sillier things I've ever done. DeAndre Jordan is a 2.3 pack. He's their best. So you want to take him away. You know, we don't think about dunkers, but that's big. Chris Paul, 1.8. J.J. Redick, 1.2. Blake Griffin, 0.6. Mo Spates, 0.5. Luke Mbamute, 0.3. This is where they're tough. Almost all these guys are positive. Austin Rivers, who won't be playing at first because he's injured. Jamal's a negative 0.6. You actually take your chances with him as much as everyone says they're scared of him. Wesley Johnson's a minus 0.7, and Raymond Felton is a minus 0.8. Clippers starting five is the second best five-man unit in the NBA. Second best five-man unit in the NBA. The only one better is the Warriors starters. And it's, frankly, the Clippers starting five was better a year ago. I'll have this number on Twitter at some point today when I finally find it. The Jazz starting lineup, which will either be Favors and Diao with Hill, Ingles, Hayward, and Gobert would be my guess, has probably played about 100 minutes of basketball together. The Clippers starting lineup will have played over the last 2 years probably well over 1,000 minutes together. We're really at a huge disadvantage of experience, time together, and these guys are really good. Their starting lineup this year has played 871 minutes together. It's the second best lineup in the NBA. It average shoots 51% when it's on the floor, 44% from three. It's when they go off of that lineup that they begin to struggle. And the Jazz have to win that. That starting lineup played 375 minutes last year, so they've played over 1,000 minutes. And over the 2 years, they're still shooting over 40% from three together. All right, that is my portion of the program brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street. Add Murdoch to the list of cars you're looking at. I think you'll be really, really pleased you did. And now let's turn it over to a little crossover from the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm David Locke, Locked On Jazz.
And I'm Lucas Han, Locked On Clippers.
All right, so Lucas, as we get ready for this, what Clipper team is it? The first 20 games, the last 15 games, or the middle?
Well, that's what's been crazy is as I'm looking at the numbers kind of getting ready to preview the series, the Clippers in their first 16 games had a point differential of plus 13. And in their last 13 games, again, plus 13. The 53 in the middle, negative one, and they finished 26 and 27 in those 53 games. I think we're getting that good Clippers team. And that doesn't mean that they're invincible, but you look at the way that they were able to get healthy and kind of really get the ball rolling and the fact that they're playing hot right now, I think that we're going to see more towards the good Clippers team and not kind of the lethargic, beat-up team we saw in the middle. But it's been a similar story with the Jazz, I think, even though the difference isn't as pronounced in the stages of the season as it is with the Clippers. It's almost like you see different teams with Utah over the last couple of years because they've struggled to keep their guys on the floor, but when they're healthy, they've been very, very good.
It's an interesting series. I think it's two teams that are much better than anyone realizes. I mean, that's really – I think the Clippers may be the second or best team in the West, and the Jazz actually may be the third. I think both these teams, when right, are as good, if not better, than both San Antonio and Houston.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Clippers definitely – you know, you can just look at it very simply. The Clippers finished four games behind the Jazz. They played 10 games without both Chris Paul and Blake Griffin – or I'm sorry, the Clippers finished four games behind the Rockets. 10 games without Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. They lost seven of them, including games to Dallas, the Lakers, Denver, Minnesota, and then Denver a second time. So those are your five games right there. If Chris Paul and Blake Griffin play, five lottery teams that put you above the Houston Rockets. So yeah, I think you're right. I think that these teams, you know, are better than people think, and I think it's kind of unfortunate, really, that whoever wins this series is going to have to play the Golden State Warriors in the second round, because these are two teams that really could have a playoff run if the matchups fell the right way. Unfortunately, they kind of got stuck in the same side of the bracket with a juggernaut.
So the Jazz have found a lineup that's been good for them. Joe Johnson at the four with Rudy Gobert and then some combination of George Hill, Rodney Hood, Gordon Hayward, and Joe Ingles. So you have four 40% three-point shooters with Rudy Gobert. What do the Clippers – Blake Griffin then becomes kind of interesting because he's got to go out and guard Joe Johnson, though he's obviously a much better player than Joe Johnson. What has happened to the Clippers when teams have done that and gone four wide with four good shooters?
Well, we've seen the results really vary. You know, Blake Griffin – when he first came into the league, there was actually talk that if the Clippers went big, he could play small forward at times because he's so athletic. His lateral quickness, because he's been playing power forward his whole career, hasn't come along to the point where you would really consider him a viable option at small forward. But in certain lineups, when you've got guys, especially guys who aren't on the quick end of things like Joe Ingles or an aging Joe Johnson, Blake's comfortable in those matchups. The Clippers will even keep Blake Griffin out on the floor. For example, when they play the Warriors and Steve Kerr decides to put Kevin Durant at power forward, the Clippers will leave Blake out in that matchup and feel comfortable with it. And even at times down the stretch of big games, they'll use him as a primary defender against guys like LeBron and Durant. So it doesn't totally wreck the Clippers defensively. I think the biggest issue for them when you space the floor is that DeAndre Jordan is a very energetic over-helper. And one of the biggest trends you'll see is that when the Clippers' defense collapses, It tends to be because DeAndre Jordan helps and no one covers his man for him. When the floor is that spaced around the centers, it makes it that much harder for a guy like J.J. Redick, who's an undersized wing, to make that guard drop and box out whoever the other center is. In this case, it's Rudy Gobert, who's one of the biggest, most athletic guys out there.
It's interesting, really interesting. So I don't have any I mean, I've called the four games, right? I've got that the Clippers have outplayed the Jazz. There is one, and it surprised me a little bit, I'll be honest, Lucas, because there's an aspect to this series where I feel like the Jazz have a matchup advantage, and they haven't been able to exploit it at all. And what that is I feel like when you have George Hill, Rodney Hood, Joe Ingles, or Gordon Hayward on the floor, you've got three different guys that can all create off the pick and roll and get things going. And so that if you have Jamal Crawford on the floor or you have Raymond Felton on the floor, the Jazz should be able to zero in on that guy and take advantage of his lack of defensive prowess, almost forcing you to keep Mba Moute on the floor while they're awesome. And maybe that's the issue. They're awesome when he's on the floor with their starters. So maybe it's not actually an advantage. But you would think that it takes away your floor spacing. And that just hasn't worked out. Have they avoided that with everyone? Is it because they are just so good with Mba Moute and the starters, it doesn't matter? Or why? Or is that something the Jazz should be able to exploit at some point?
Well, we've seen teams over the last 5 years when Jamal has been on the Clippers really zero in on him and, like you said, isolate him and take advantage of him. One thing that I think has been maybe not talked about this season, because he's obviously just a backup point guard, is that Raymond Felton has quietly been one of the Clippers' better defenders. So I don't think he's a guy you really want to attack. He's been really, really solid. The only thing that limits him is his foot speed. But as far as pick and roll coverages, he's a guy you really trust. And Austin Rivers, when he's engaged and not focusing too much on offense, is a plus defender too. So what you have when the Clippers bring out that three-guard bench unit with Felton, Rivers, and Crawford, you tend to not play against teams that have three pick-and-roll ball handlers on the bench. And so if Utah can put those lineups out there against the Clippers and simply feed the ball to whoever Jamal is guarding, maybe they'll be able to take advantage of it. But it seems that any time that someone is out there who, you know, you aren't super worried about as a pick and roll distributor, or is maybe even out there with a guy that you aren't really worried about as an amazing finisher on the other end, you hide Jamal in that matchup and you normally get away with it. But that's definitely something that we've seen be as a big weakness for the Clippers in recent years, that Jamal Crawford, who Doc Rivers leans on so heavily as a crutch, is just a really, really big weakness on the defensive end.
And the other thing is Jamal Crawford, playoff Jamal Crawford, has not been very good for a few years. So that I think gets to be interesting on this as well. What are where are the areas where you think the Clippers are either superior and have a significant edge, or maybe you're concerned about?
Well, I think the real battle to watch in this series is going to be between DeAndre Jordan and Rudy Gobert, because we've seen so many different DeAndre Jordans over the course of the season. You know, there was a stretch of games in December where Chris Paul and Blake Griffin were both injured. The Clippers were losing to lottery teams. And DeAndre Jordan, first of all, was disengaged during the games, when these were maybe games when you'd think he'd try to take over and put up like a 20-20 line. Instead, he became very disengaged when the team was losing. He would not show up for press conferences. We'd be sitting there in the press room, you know, 30 minutes, 45 minutes after the last guy came in, and then finally someone would come and say, DJ went home, he's not talking to reporters tonight. So on the flip side, we've seen games where he's putting up 20 and 20. You know, in the last game of the season against the Kings, he was everywhere on both ends of the floor. And obviously we all know what Rudy Gobert can do. If DeAndre Jordan is playing at his best, that matchup is going to be very tight. They'll have games where they're even. Maybe DJ's a little better in one game, Gobert's a little better in the other game. I think if DeAndre plays Gobert that closely, the Jazz start running out of areas where they have clear advantages over the Clippers. But if Gobert can really establish superiority in that matchup, the rest of the Jazz have a whole lot less that they need to do. Because obviously you look at the small forward position with Gordon Hayward as a big you know, W for the Jazz. They're better there. Whoever Gordon Hayward's matched up against, he's going to be better then. But the Clippers have big advantages with Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. And Gobert is where the Jazz can start to swing that back. If the Clippers can play that matchup even, I think it gets very, very hard for Utah to start finding the production other spaces on the floor to make up for that disparity with Paul and Griffin.
I mean, the Jazz haven't been able to score against them, right? I mean, they did one night, but I mean, two of the Jazz worst defensive ratings or offensive ratings all night, all year long, two of them are against the Clippers. You know, they put up
a 75-point game
right.
and a 72-point game.
Right. I mean, they just couldn't score. Now, Gordon Hayward didn't play in one of them. What's interesting when you look at them is the Jazz couldn't get threes. So the Jazz went 7 of 19 in the first one and 4 of 23 in the second. The Jazz averaged 26 three attempts a game in against the Clippers. They have not been able to get the three off. So the Clippers are clearly running the Jazz off the line, not giving – I have a note. I have a lot of notes at this point, but I have a note that Rodney Hood, here you go, only 4 of his 30 shots against the Clippers so far this year have been catch and shoots. So
yeah, I think we talked earlier about Jamal Crawford, how he's, you know, you mentioned that he hasn't been very good in the playoffs. I think Rodney Hood might be the kind of guy that could have a very disappointing postseason for the Jazz, even though he's been a good scorer for them, because these are the kind of guys that we tend to see underperform in the playoffs. And I think in the same sense that we're kind of used to Jamal Crawford having a worse playoffs in regular season, Rodney Hood is a guy that I kind of have my eye on. Yeah, if he gets really hot, he can swing a game and potentially even swing a series. But over a larger sample size, I'd expect him to actually, with his efficiency levels, to struggle in the postseason.
So here's as we begin to wrap this up, and you guys can follow Lucas on Locked On Clippers all week, or if you already do, then because I'm talking Locked On Clippers people, you can follow me on Locked On Jazz. Here's what's interesting that I don't think's been talked about yet. In the games in which the Clippers beat the Jazz, the Clippers didn't score. So the Clippers' offensive ratings in the four games against the Jazz, and for those who don't follow offensive rating, the league average is about 104. I haven't done my notes, but I'm guessing the Clippers are probably about 109 for the year. Is that about right? I think that's...
Yeah, the Clippers are at... Oh, they're at 113, actually.
Oh, for the whole season. Are you using Basketball Reference or using NBA?
Yeah, Basketball Reference.
So it's a little lower on the... I'm using NBA, which is a little lower, but...
Okay.
So but call it 110, just to be nice and round. First game, they were 97. Second game, they were 95. Then they were 118 in the loss, and they were 113 in the fourth game. So in two of the four games, the Clippers didn't score either, which I think gets interesting
yeah.
to this series.
And I think that kind of goes to show a little bit of Utah's style, because you know the Jazz play at the slowest pace of anyone in the league, which is something that's interesting because you hear people talk about, you know, a young team getting to the playoffs, how are they going to deal when the pace and physicality changes? Well, Utah already plays at the slowest pace of anyone in the league. But their weakness has to be the offense. You know, only 12th in offensive rating, average, and a lot of that is Gordon Hayward-based. I think one thing that maybe could change that from what we saw in some of those regular season games is the health of George Hill. Might revitalize Utah's offense a little bit and add another really impressive dimension that gives the Clippers trouble. But the Clippers, for all their offensive prowess, have actually been a very good defensive team under Doc Rivers. They had this slump in the middle of this season that kind of tanked this season's defensive rating. But when they've been engaged at the beginning and ends, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but they've been very good defensively. And in those first 16 games when the Clippers were 14-2, they were the best defensive team in the NBA.
And
they haven't been as good at the close, but they've still been very good. So what you have, I think the difference between these two teams, is the Clippers have that kind of experience and balance where they can win games in a lot of different ways. The Clippers can win games 125 to 118, but they can also win gritty playoff games 88 to 82. And we know that the Jazz can win when the pace is slow and their defense is taking over. But the Clippers might be right at that level with them as far as a gritty defensive team. And then when the pace changes, I really think Utah struggles to keep up with them in the higher scoring games.
And, you know, that's Doc Rivers has said, we're good with pace when we're playing with power. It doesn't mean necessarily up-tempo, but if we slow down and start walking, we're not very good. That's when Chris Paul's just suddenly pounding and you have no movement. Should be interesting to see, you know, might be as simple as whether the Jazz can find a way to make those threes. The one game they won, they made 14-21. The three games they've lost, they've made 28%. So sometimes it gets into simply make or miss league, and when you're playing slow possession half-court games, it gets even more vital.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you see stuff like that swing series all the time. I think back to this current Clippers group, their first playoff series, kind of in a similar position to the one that Utah's in now, where they were down big in that fourth quarter of game one. You might even remember this game. And Nick Young hit three straight threes from the right corner against the Grizzlies. And the Clippers came back and won that game at the buzzer. And it was one of the biggest comebacks in NBA playoff history. And it just kind of opened the floodgates for hot shooting for them in that series. And, you know, a series can turn like that on momentum.
The last question I would have for you, I'm curious about, I think the question on our end is, you know, are we experienced enough? And the answer is probably no. I don't know, you know, can they get through it? We'll see. The question I have is what happens that would cause all the old scars to open back up with this team?
For the Clippers?
Yeah. I mean, right? I mean, there's a lot of this group is unique in the sense it has
a lot
of
baggage.
There's a lot of bad, mutually bad experiences together.
Yeah, I think it would have to come, you know, you see this a lot. Whenever the Clippers are up, they have a double-digit lead in the fourth quarter and a team starts to chip away. The Clippers get this look in their eyes like, oh no, not again. Because especially with that Game 6 against the Houston Rockets in the second round a couple years ago, where Corey Brewer and Josh Smith, of all people, started hitting threes from everywhere and came back and took that series away from the Clippers. They haven't quite psychologically gotten over that yet. They've struggled down the stretch of games. And like you said, they play worse when Chris Paul is pounding the ball. And it's always been a problem of his that when the Clippers have an 8-point lead with 4 minutes left, he's draining the clock instead of playing basketball.
Well, Luke,
if the Jazz if they can have a big comeback win in games one or two, for example, if the Clippers are up 12 with 8 minutes left in game one and the Jazz get hot and come back, that's something that could break the Clippers.
Well, be interesting to see. Lucas, any final things you have for me? Certainly going to be a good series, and we can chat hopefully Wednesday or Thursday before we do game three on Friday.
Yeah, I actually had one note here that I wanted to talk to you about. So I noticed, just looking through kind of simple box score stats about this series, that Utah is one of the worst assist teams in the NBA. So George Hill leads them in assists per game, only averaging 4.1, whereas the Clippers are way more top-heavy, with Chris Paul 9.8, and then Blake Griffin is second at 4.9. But what was interesting to me is that just looking at the per-minute numbers on assists, Utah has a lot of balance. So they've actually got four guys averaging four or more assists per 36 minutes, and then three more at three. So to what extent do these kind of like secondary crafty passers, like, you know, a guy like Joe Inglis, a guy like Boris Diaw, who aren't going to have the ball in their hands all the time like you'd expect, you know, a point guard like Chris Paul to, what extent does that like add a dimension to Utah's offense that we don't really see with a lot of teams who don't have quality passers at those forward positions?
This has been going on for like since Quinn Snyder took over. So it's definitely systematic. The Jazz will lead the league in passes made. This year we're down to fourth with 319 a game, and then be last in the league in assists. And what's really interesting is we're last in the league, second to last in the league in potential assists. So what that tells you is we make a huge amount of passes to get action moving, get the ball swinging side to side. Quinn fundamentally believes if people touch the ball, they'll defend better on the other side, even if they don't take the shot. And so you see a huge amount of that. And so there's a huge amount of action that leads to action. And the reason I think, and I don't know if I'm answering your question correctly, that we are low on assists is because so much of our action then leads to a dribble handoff that is coming around for two dribbles and a pull-up jumper or driving at the rim or rolling Rudy to the basket. Most of our assists are on Rudy rolls, or you're making the extra pass out to three. But we end up playing kind of more off the bounce where the system, whereas in a lot of teams, James Harden and Russell Westbrook's creating the advantage and then you're pitching it around. The Jazz, our system, is creating the advantage with a dribble handoff or some sort of pitch or some sort of action. And then the ball, then that's creating either the look or that's creating the gets the ball start moving. And there's already been a ton of action beforehand. Does that make sense or not?
Yeah. So it's built a little more around maybe what you consider like a diss it, because I think it's actually beautiful basketball, but something you consider more of like a high school or college style built on ball reversals instead of the more standard NBA style of kind of penetrate and kick.
There are not a lot of possessions where we just come up and run the high pick and roll. Like if that's like, okay. If you think about the NBA that way, you just won't see a great amount of us just coming up high pick and roll. You will see it to go get maybe Jamal Crawford or maybe to go get Raymond Felton, right? So if they want to get Rodney Hood or Gordon Hayward in a matchup, you'll see Quinn run a lot of small pick and rolls to get a specific player matched up on a specific guy.
But not a lot of, you know, you see with the Clippers all the time, DeAndre Jordan comes up and sets the screen, Chris Paul comes off it and either looks for a mid-range jumper, looks for the lob, kicks to a shooter. The offense is that's almost the engine that the offense is built around. Utah, you'll see it more as a preliminary thing to set up certain matchups as they get into their action.
I think that's a good way to say it. Well, how about we talk on Wednesday or Thursday, and you'll tell me whether you think whether you see it, and we'll see whether the Jazz have been able to score or not.
Absolutely, sounds good.
Napa know how. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa auto parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.